Welcome, friends. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, coming to you as always from the sunny climes of Western Japan, where it is now the 24th day of August, 2012. And today I am talking once again to Andrew Gavin Marshall in Canada, where it's still the 23rd of August. And he is joining us as always from La Belle Province du Québec. So, Andrew Gavin Marshall, thank you so much for joining us today.
Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure to have you here, and with the wealth of information you have on so many different topics, I want to talk about something that you touched on in your Empire, Power, and People podcast several episodes back now. You did a very interesting expose on the Desmarais family and their role in Canadian politics, and this is something that even many of the Canadians in the crowd probably know next to nothing about. So let's talk a little bit about this family, their background, and what kind of control they have in Canadian politics.
Sure. I mean, the Desmarais clan, essentially our version of the Rockefellers, truly. They're a dynastic family in Canada. They rose through the patriarch, Paul Desmarais Sr., who rose to the top of Power Corporation, which was originally a utility power company, but now the name truly fits, and it's expanded largely into financial services, energy, oil. They're essentially Canada's largest corporate footprint in China. Now the two sons of Paul Desmarais Sr., André Desmarais and Paul Desmarais Jr., have really risen to the position of co-CEOs of Power Corporation. They're on several other boards. Power Corporation also has shares in GDF Suez, a major European corporation, industrial giant, essentially. They have several shares in insurance companies all across Canada. Power Financial Corporation is another subsidiary. And they have extensive reaches through think tanks. For example, Paul Desmarais Jr. is on the board of the Canadian International Council, which is the Canadian equivalent to the Council on Foreign Relations. They're also members of the Trilateral Commission, have attended meetings of the Bilderberg Group, have shared directorships at the International Advisory Board of the Council on Foreign Relations. One of the sons even served on the International Advisory Board of JP Morgan Chase for a while. So they have connections with the Rockefeller dynasty in the United States through various think tanks and corporations and boards of directors, but also they even have connections with the major European financial dynasties, including the Rothschilds. A member of a European Rothschild bank is also on the board of directors of Power Corporation. Their influence within Canada is especially interesting to the political class. There's not a single prime minister in Canada since the 1970s that is not in some way connected with the Desmarais family. So you had Pierre Elliott Trudeau, who had close connections to the Desmarais and Power Corporation, and after he left office, he joined the board of Power Corporation. Of course, Brian Mulroney rose through the ranks at Power Corp. And has been a longtime family ally. Paul Martin also rose through the ranks. Jean Chrétien's daughter married André Desmarais. Married André Desmarais, so they're actually family connections in some instances. And then with Stephen Harper today, we also have connections through some of his ministers who have either come from Power Corporation or left to go join Power Corporation. And apparently the connections between Harper and the Desmarais were facilitated by Brian Mulroney, no less. And so they have connections also with Bob Rae from the NDP, with the Parti Québécois, so all of Canada's main political parties, and especially in Quebec, where the Desmarais family are based, right here in Montreal. And they have extensive connections with Quebec's current premier, who may not be premier for a couple more weeks, Jean Charest, and the Liberal Party here, as well as the Parti Québécois. So they really have their fingers in every dish, so to speak.
They certainly do, and I think anyone who takes a look at that that list of connections that you just named would be uneasy at a fundamental level, thinking about any type of pretense of democracy in Canada with one corporation having that many ties to that many political figures. It's almost absurd. But apart from just the confluence of power that is self-evidently there, what can we say that we know about what the agenda of the Desmarais family might be, or what type of ideological alliances or allegiances they might have?
Oh, well, it's fairly easy to discover this. All you have to do is really look at the organizations they are affiliated with, not simply abstract connections through friendships or relationships, but through actual holding of the boards of directors, being essentially leadership, in leadership positions on these various institutions. So we have the Montreal Economic International Economic Forum of the Americas, which is essentially Canada's annual Bilderberg meeting. It draws hundreds of elites from all over the world. The last meeting in June had the special guest being Alan Greenspan. So he came up to talk about what a great job he did creating the global economic crisis. And the Desmarais host this annual forum. Typically, you have the head of the IMF coming, board members of the forum. The chairman is, of course, a Desmarais, but board members include the heads of the World Trade Organization and the heads of the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development and all these other massive international organizations. And as we can just simply look at their function in the world, the current ideology which they especially espouse is neoliberalism. They were very much embedded in all the think tanks within Canada since the 1970s that promoted neoliberalism. For example, the C.D. Howe Institute, on the board of directors of that, is Hélène Desmarais, the wife of Paul Desmarais Jr. She's on the board of every neoliberal think tank and economic institution in Quebec. Just looking at her CV is a reading of power in this province and in Canada. And the C.D. Howe Institute has consistently promoted neoliberalism throughout Canada. And also, of course, just globalization in general, through their links to the Trilateral Commission. You can very easily see these connections and interests and ideologies. And of course, also global governance initiatives. So you see, as global study in schools for global governance studies are emerging now, a lot of their funding comes from things like the Rockefeller Foundation, very typical sources, but Power Corporation as well. So it's kind of an embedded network at the top levels. And I mean, you can really see a very interesting video to watch on YouTube was leaked by Anonymous. And it's essentially a two-hour video of a party hosted by the Desmarais in honor of his wife's birthday or something. And they have this estate in Quebec, which is actually larger than the island of Manhattan. Typically, they fly in friends like George H.W. Bush, the King of Spain, who recently got into controversy by hunting elephants in Africa while 50% of the youth in Spain are unemployed. So these are their friends and their social circles. In the video, you see the Desmarais sitting next to Jean Charest, the Quebec premier, who is raising student tuition. And on the other side of Desmarais is George H.W. Bush. You see Charlie Rose, who's a longtime Bilderberg member as well. There you see Jean Chrétien, Paul Martin. This is just their social circle. And of course, they built an entire opera theater for the birthday and had opera playing. They've invited the Cirque du Soleil to come play on their estate. And I mean, this, it's just a different world. And it's a world where the people at the top, whatever nation you're in, that's not really how you identify yourself. You don't identify yourself with the other people in your country, or they're just all at the bottom. So you interact with people in that position across the world. So that's why their friends are the royalty in Spain and the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and the Bush dynasty and these other families. And their ideologies are all the same. It's about more for them and less for everyone else.
Well, that's such an important point, because it is about social circles and the people that we feel connected to in on an ideological basis, so that I might feel much more connected to you than I am to any of the rich elite here in Japan, regardless of our geography, but because of the similarity in our own situations. So that is an important part of how this all works. But let's examine the fact that all of this information that you're stating is publicly available information. It doesn't require a great deal of digging to surface this information, and yet I can attest when I was in school and been studying about Canadian politics, etc., the number of times that I heard about the Demery family and Power Corporation was precisely zero. And I don't know, maybe there's been a revolution in education over the past 8 years that I've been in Japan, but can you speak to your experience of Canadians' awareness of these issues?
No, it's virtually non-existent. Within Quebec specifically, the Desmarais Power Corporation owns most of the media in Quebec. And in fact, the Desmarais own 7 of the 10 French language newspapers. You also have other major media outlets, English-speaking media outlets in Canada, where you have the Mulroneys on the board of directors. And no matter what language the media is in within Canada, it's the same network that control it all. And in fact, a recent study came out which showed that Canada has essentially the most, either the top or the second most concentrated media in the industrialized world. I mean, that means that the United States media has more variety than the Canadian media system. And I mean, that's a shocking a fact. It's a fact nonetheless. And as for the educational system, I mean, you just look at the structure of the educational system itself and the governance structure. I mean, you look at, for example, here in Quebec, again, the two major English-speaking universities are McGill and Concordia. Well, the president of Concordia is on the board of directors of the Bank of Montreal. One of the directors on one of the governors at Concordia is also on the board of Power Corporation. Now you go to McGill University, and the principal and vice chancellor is a woman named Heather Munro Blum. She happens to sit on the board of the Royal Bank of Canada, and she's also a board member of the International Economic Forum of the Americas, chaired by the Desmarais family. She's also involved with the Desmarais family in other areas, other think tanks, for example, and various boards. But these people are all connected, they're all interactive, and their influence spans across the institutions. It's not merely a matter of the financial institutions. And you can trace this historical development where, yes, a lot of these families, for example, the Rockefellers in the United States, rose up through, for example, oil, went into finance, but their interests expanded because as their power developed, they saw the need to have a greater influence over society. Because, I mean, 100 years ago, the Rockefellers had a horrific reputation, but they decided that they needed to preserve their power, so they had to expand their control. That's what we call philanthropy. The Rockefeller Foundation came up. John D. Rockefeller himself founded the University of Chicago. They spread their influence into the educational system, into the media structure. And this was designed to preserve their power and influence. And it's worked very effectively, as we can see. So naturally, their names like to be kept out of the media as much as possible, because they want to be just sort of in the background. You don't actually focus on them, you don't mention them, and generally you don't even know they exist. And that allows people to continue with the illusion that we have a pluralistic democracy. And that illusion sustains, generally speaking.
Well, through conversations like this one, hopefully we are combating that ignorance that is the foundation of that that illusion that people are laboring under. So once we've reached this point of being able to identify at least part of the nexus of power that's really governing the country, as opposed to the political puppets who are dangled out in front of us, what can the average concerned Canadian citizen do about this? And by extension, I mean Americans, when we talk about the Rockefellers, or Europeans talking about the Rothschild banking dynasty, etc. What can the average citizen who is looking at this type of power structure that's operating completely behind the scenes and at a level that seems beyond the reach of what the average voter, for example, can do, what can the average citizen actually do to affect change in a system like this?
Oh, it sounds very complicated. It seems like there's this huge monolithic, it's a David and Goliath type situation, of course. So people feel isolated and they feel like there's nothing that they can do. But it's actually quite simple. All you have to do is just start taking actions. I mean, if you look just simply at Detroit, this is a city where there has been, it's in a depression, in an economic depression. It's deindustrialized, incredibly poor. But people in their communities, especially the poor urban communities, have simply started doing things like growing their own food. You know, so it's, we need access to food, we need to have food for obvious reasons, and it needs to be cheap and accessible, so let's just grow it ourselves. I mean, that's a type of direct action which simply moves around institutions. It doesn't require overthrowing the government or battling the police on a day-to-day basis there to repress and control you. It simply means you have to take small actions, because if you start taking various small actions in different local communities and interacting and reaching out to other communities both locally and globally, you simply move around the system as it exists. You simply create something new entirely. I mean, even if you look at the educational system, it's institutionalized, dominated, and profit-oriented. So simply create a new educational system. You just get people together. You start talking about new venues for sharing knowledge, for making knowledge accessible, for talking, discussing, teaching, learning, listening. And you can just do this going around the system. You won't get an official degree out of anything like that, but I mean, even people who have degrees today don't have the chance to even get a job with them. So it's you simply make the system as it exists obsolete. But the only way to do that is to actually start taking small actions, which may seem in the large context of things irrelevant, but they're the most important way to move forward. And in fact, they're the only way to move forward. And that's why it's not discussed, because people at the top are afraid that if you actually realize that, that if you actually realize that it's just about small community actions as a start, then you might actually make them obsolete and irrelevant, which is what we should do.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I think that's exactly what we need to do, and we need to stop focusing on the centers of power, because that's what gives them power to a large extent when we look to them as the people who are going to somehow deliver solutions or something. Of course, it has to start at home, and that's a message that unfortunately a lot of people don't want to hear because it means more work for them. But if we don't start taking that responsibility on, I think we will be lost as a society. Lots of very interesting points to ponder here, but for people who are more interested in this subject and in the wide variety of subjects that you cover in your work. Of course, I mentioned that this was covered recently on your Boiling Frogs Post podcast, Empire, Power, and People, but you also have your own personal websites. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure, you can go to andrewgavinmarshall.com and the peoplesbookproject.com. I have general journalistic articles covering various issues, but with the peoplesbookproject.com, I also am engaging in a lot of research studying institutions, ideas, and individuals of power and resistance in society historically and presently. And I give excerpts and samples from the research as I go along. And as your last point was absolutely correct, I mean, it's basically an idea that you either suffer or struggle. And while the idea of struggle is sort of hard to approach because it sounds very difficult, and it is, and it requires a lot of effort, the other option is simply to suffer. So when you're faced with that choice, I mean, the answer is obvious.
I think so too, but and I think a lot of people are coming on to that message, and hopefully conversations like this one will help spur them along in that direction. But Andrew Gavin Marshall, let's leave it there. Thank you again so much for your time tonight.
Thanks very much.